Hi, I'm Danny.
And I'm Gabby.
And this is Clashes, a podcast exploring culture shock in all its chaotic forms.
We know a good shock can shake things up.
So we blew up our lives and crash landed in Paris.
With a delusional sense of hope.
And a dangerous bread habit.
I feel attacked. But culture shock isn't just about changing countries.
Almost. It's about embracing the unknown.
From navigating friendships in your 30s.
Awkward. To processing pop culture's oddest obsessions.
So buckle up and embrace the chaos.
One clash at a time.
Okay, welcome back, everyone.
Welcome.
I'm screaming into the microphone.
Episode 10 or 9. Depends who you ask.
Depends if the mini one counts.
No one will know.
What's new? Mystery. We didn't even little plan a what's new update, Danny. So what's actually new?
Oh my God. What's new? I don't know.
Pause for 5 minutes.
I'm like thinking if I have an interesting story to tell.
Problem is, Danny and I catch up before we record, and then we're like, the podcast start, we can't gossip.
Okay, what's new is tonight you're hosting a cheese party.
Yeah, co-hosting. I'm pretty sure my co-host is going to end up doing a lot more work than me. To be fair, you have already done more work than me. You spend all day looking for pairings.
Yeah, I mean, I really love this idea of like hosting a theme that's like around food.
You do. You're a theme girl.
I love a theme. Yeah. And so
if it were up to you, we would have to make PowerPoint presentations.
I have key points I'm going to talk about. Yeah. I'm not putting a presentation together, but I am going to talk about my
talking points for the evening.
Yeah. So you and Jess.
Yeah, it'll be fun. The idea was just like to respect, like to celebrate and respect. I sound so PR-y, cheese. But I've always wanted to do a party where we like
celebration.
Yeah. I love saying fête de fromage. I said that today at the cheese shop. He's like, okay, I don't know.
I know. I was telling the cheese lady, he was like, I'm going to a fête de fromage. And the girl's like, okay.
Yeah, we're making it a thing, so get it together. But I've always wanted to have a party where like there's a lot of pairings accessible, because I think what's so fun, I actually got inspired in New York. I went to a bar once and we ordered a cheese plate, and she came out with these like super random pairings. It was like Cheetos.
Oh, that's cool.
It just was like so odd. And ever
since, imagine going to like,
I know, a French restaurant.
A Parisian brasserie and be like, can I get some
Cheetos?
It literally
was like Cheetos, like a pickle. It was like some other weird stuff. And I was like, how fun would it be to just have a ton of cheeses and a ton of pairings and get to like make little combos? I love a little combo.
I also love going into a cheese shop and being like, let me get like weird cheeses that I've never tried and just like eating
it's fun.
With someone.
The experience of buying cheese to me is still one of the things that combats depression more than like anything.
Yeah.
So that we'll recap it next week. We might even take some photos and share, but there's going to be, I mean, both of us got,
I got five
between
cheeses.
Three people, you, me and Jess, we each got four to five cheeses. So that's 15 for three people. There's going to be like, we have 25 people coming almost. There's going to be like,
don't like start farting.
Yeah. It's, it'll probably be me.
but it'll be fun. And the best part about it is like, I mean, I did spend a lot of money on cheese, but like you don't have to.
Yeah.
So
I did also somehow spend like $55.
I just lost my mind inside the cheese shop. I was like, what is this cheese? I've never had it. Can I get a block of that?
It is an excuse. It's a good excuse to try new things. So I'm excited
for
that.
That's what's new.
Yeah. I've also been really into the Hercules theme song recently. Okay. Tell me, would you recognize what the song is?
Is that the how far
yeah.
I can go? Yeah.
How the other night I was like in a Mac in like a real depression hole, and I just kept singing to myself like da, 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 da. And then I don't know, man. There's no cure for depression. Like
that's the millennials, the climb.
Oh, and then I like turned into a whole spiral, like just around the river bend. I did some
Disney does hit
Pocahontas.
Disney music is just great.
Yeah, it was amazing. Okay, well, today we are going to be talking about, I love our title, which I hope we keep, is it's toxic relationship between New York and Paris. So essentially this mix of odd and kind of flawed relationship between the two cities that we've been very privy to, having lived there, now living here, and having friends between the both, and also going back and forth.
We also kind of feed the monster because we live in Paris, but we can't stop talking about New York.
It is true. This is our second episode.
This is our toxic trait.
We've done this. We're importing New York to Paris. Today, this guy, I was jogging and he totally ignored me jogging, turned on a red light on his end and almost crashed. Actually, he did crash into me. He hit me when I was jogging and I just screamed. I'm like, that's not how you fucking use a bike lane, asshole. And I was like,
okay,
oh, man.
What do you think? We're in Queens or something?
I was like, bringing New York. I feel like I was an episode of Seinfeld.
Oh,
like,
I love telling people off in English here because half the time they're like, what are you saying?
It literally felt so powerful when I did it.
I just
it.
Don't know how to fight in French yet.
No, and I know they would like, if I fought it in French, like they'd think I was weak, but I'm like, they have no idea what I'm saying. All they heard was fuck. So I'm like, hopefully they thought it was powerful. So that is not at all what our podcast is about today.
but we are kind sure. of responsible, not responsible, but participants in this New York Paris toxic relationship, meaning like both cities are obsessed with each other.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's weird because it's like they're very similar, but they're so different. So it's like
they're similar because they're big, or like they're not even big. Paris isn't big. They're similar Paris because they're like centers of culture.
Of course. Yeah. And yeah. And then there's the attraction of like there's a lot of like cultural things, like you said, art, good food, like all these things. So it attracts like the same kind of people, I would say, but it's very different experiences. Mm-hmm. However, and I think this is something I'm looking at the outline that you wrote. It's just very interesting. Like, why is every cool new thing in Paris like a New York thing?
Yeah.
And why is every cool new thing in New York a Parisian or French thing?
Yeah. And we're going to also talk about like why they're so bastardized, like why every time it shows up in another culture, it's like a little off. And is there any way to do it in a way that's respectful but still fun? I think that there's like probably some art of bringing something to a new culture but adapting it to the context without completely losing the context where it's from.
Exactly. But
we were inspired because for everyone who reads Emily Sundberg's newsletter, she has this secret critic on who goes by Jay Lee. His Instagram is Carrie Bradshaw. We'll link to it if you guys want to follow it. But he did this review of Chez Fifi in New York, and it's like kind of a mockery of how it opens up the conversation of like why every French restaurant in New York is just like not nailing it.
Well, and just for people who don't know, can you tell us what Chez Fifi is?
Okay, not that well, because I don't even really know that well, but it's just a new French restaurant in New York.
New French,
and it's supposed to be kind of like echoing a bistro, but if you look at photos of it, it's like it's old school, but it's like way bougier than a classic bistro to me. Like, it's to me, a classic bistro is like pretty humble.
Where is it? In the Upper East Side? I think it's always on 74th
I'm like
Street.
Not actually a food critic, so yeah.
No, but it's like it's in the Upper East Side, which is 74th not
Street.
Uncool, but it's not the coolest part of.
It's very old school. It's like a really, it would be like a really fancy French bistro. So basically he said there were a couple things that were good, a lot of stuff that was mediocre, just kind of like trying really hard to be French. But he had this one.
What does he take? What is the takedown of this place? Like what's wrong
with it? It's not a horrible takedown. Okay. It's more like mockery. And he just like laughs at how they have a baguette, but they cut the baguette lengthwise into three pieces. So imagine a tartine, you know, like a tartine for breakfast.
Like a morning.
But imagine you make that into like, you take the baguette and you somehow find a way to cut it into three skinny flat pieces. And that's how they serve it at the table. And but I'm laughing so hard.
That's a huge piece of bread.
It's a huge piece of bread, but also really thin piece of bread. So weird. You also can't do the thing like when you dip the bread in your food because like, there's not, that's like, I'm like actually using my hands, so there's no way to show you guys what I'm doing, but like, there's not a way to easily dip it. But it really, and then he was on the, I don't know if you guys listen to the Taste podcast. There's a host, Matt Rodbard. He's great. I have like a podcast addiction, as Danny knows. And this critic was on and talking about how New York also has this massive croissant obsession.
Oh my God.
And he was like, why is everyone like eating 100 croissants a day? Now, let me just set the record straight. I have no issue with croissants. I think you can eat as many croissants as you want, but it's true, and everyone is kind of adapting their variation of the croissant, you know.
That's a very interesting topic. I have a lot of feelings about it.
A croissant specifically?
Yeah. And like all this new trendy ways to eat a croissant.
What did we get the other day? It was like dipped in matcha, but it was like pure sugar.
It was
it was weird.
Gross.
Yeah. It was just like frosting, like dipped in matcha frosting.
I have it. We'll talk about it later because I have it in the talking points when we talk about like food and the drink industry and everything. But
what do you, so like back to your question. So like, why do you think they want to mimic each other so badly?
Well, we were talking about this yesterday, and I think, I don't know if this is why, but I think the biggest difference or the thing that each city gets out of the other is I think Parisians crave like the newness and innovation and creativity that like the New York scene has. So that's why they import a lot of those things here. And I think New Yorkers or people who live in New York really crave the tradition and like the slowness and like the history that French culture has. So that's why they want to import into New York. So I don't know if that's why, but I do think like, I remember when I lived in Williamsburg, there was this one French cafe called Sauvage, and it was the only kind of brasserie-looking place that had outdoor seating, which is not a thing in New York.
Well, normally. It wasn't before COVID, and now it's like some places have it.
Yeah, but it's like that makeshift, like shitty sitting outside.
Yeah, the only place I used to live was like 2nd Avenue in East Village. We used to have some restaurants. And I
that had outdoor seating.
Yeah, but that was it. And of course,
but this one was like a wraparound, like terrace.
What neighborhood was that in?
It was like the border of Williamsburg and Greenpoint, like by McCarran Park. Okay. It's not there anymore, but it used to be. It was called Sauvage. And I remember thinking like, This is so funny. It's like the only place where you can like sit in a terrace and have a coffee, smoke a cigarette, whatever you want to do, is a French restaurant. Mm. And I was like, they actually kind of like nailed that whole... Well, I mean, just the fact that they had outdoor seating. I was like, this is like very Parisian.
Yeah. That's what makes the city Paris, I feel like, the terrace culture. Yeah.
Like just like slowing down, enjoying your food, hanging out, like that kind of...
It's an experience. It's not like... I feel like New York has gotten to this point where it's like, let's get the reservation. Yeah. Let's get there. Let's try every dish. Let's review it really quickly in the moment. Let's write up our reviews and then let's pay the check. It's just this like wham, bam... totally fast experience. Yeah. It has nothing to do with the... To me, it doesn't have to do with the experience. Yeah. It has to do with like
the actual... And it's also like what everybody else is doing. It's like everyone's going to one restaurant
and you're
in
checking it off a list. This is what I struggle with. But I feel like we're going to recreate our last episode about what we have issues with New York dining, which I could...
But I think New Yorkers crave... I don't think it's possible in New York. Like, I actually don't think that's like something that's ever going to happen in New York. But
the French culture, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. They crave the slowness, the slower pace of life, the enjoying a coffee for 30 minutes.
Yeah, they'd have to like find a way to counter capitalism and table turnover to stay open. Yeah.
That's why when COVID happened, everybody was like, let's go to nature, and everybody went upstate. Mm-hmm. And now they're like, okay, actually, I don't want this anymore. And they all came back. You know,
because so everyone's like, an addict to the city.
Yeah. And so I think what the Parisian thing also, and I think this is something we discuss, is like, it's interesting because each city thinks they're recreating whatever the other city has, but they do it in a way that's not really like the real deal. So I do think that New Yorkers or Americans in general have this idea of like what like the Parisian lifestyle is. In many ways, they have it right. We do have a slower pace of life. We enjoy life a little more. Like we take our time to enjoy certain activities. But
we throw cheese parties.
We throw cheese parties. You don't go bankrupt when you go to the cheese shop, unless you're me and you go crazy. But I do think they understand that part of it, but then they also romanticize it to a point that it's like not realistic.
Yeah.
And so I do think a lot of it, or when you talk to like Americans or people who are like obsessed with Paris, they're like, I love it, you're so lucky. Like, I remember I used to post like, you know, it's rainy, like I haven't seen the sun in, I don't know, 3 weeks. And they're like, but at least you're in Paris. Oh, yeah, and I'm like, I'm still seasonally depressed. Yeah. So
classic response. I also think that there's an obsession recently with like transportive places, transportive things. I've been noticing this a lot with my job, specifically with like food brands. Like every brand is trying to transport you to a new culture. And there's obviously like a massive like international food CPG world in New York where like every snack, every new innovation is like supposed to be. So I also think that in New York and Paris, I've been noticing a lot of places opening up, like transporting you to a French bistro, like in Paris, like the burger shop that's going to transport you to the streets of New York. Like it's so interesting, like at a time when we have more access to travel than ever, we still want to have these like easily accessible
but travel. I think it's like that thing of like food can be very nostalgic and transport you places. And I do think like we kind of talked about this offline too, but it's like New Yorkers are always trying to escape.
Yeah,
New
York. True. It's true. Yeah.
Even if it's for like 1 hour, you know, they're like, I need to go dinner. I go to dinner and like just pretend I'm in Paris.
Yeah.
Or pretend I'm not in New York for like 1 hour or 2 hours.
They always say the only way to ever love New York is to leave it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think it's the same for Parisians. You know, Parisians have...
Also, Parisians don't have very much money. So it's like the thought of going to New York right now is just so hard. So it's like an accessible way to get like your New York fix.
Yeah. And also it's like, it's funny because, you know, people think French people hate Americans, which in some cases is true, but they also are obsessed with American culture, like obsessed with American culture. Yeah. A lot of them don't even know what that means. I mean, they know whatever the media like puts out
there. They always ask me, they're like, did you have homecoming? Did you have cheerleaders? Did you have a football team? And I'm like, oh, we had it all, baby.
I know. I had a French friend that when I threw a Thanksgiving, she's like, if you ever do Thanksgiving in Paris, like, I want to come. And I was like, really? She's like, yes, it's been my dream ever since I watched it in movies. And I was like,
Gossip Girl, probably.
But I was like, okay, sure. Which is funny because I do think like French people like look down on Thanksgiving food, but they actually love the tradition.
Oh, and,
like,
you don't think that. We know that because we did a Thanksgiving lunch with all your French husbands, and they were like,
I remember Paul's like, marshmallows. Do I need to try the pumpkin pie? No, it wasn't pumpkin pie, it was the sweet potato.
Oh, it was sweet potatoes
because it had like marshmallows on top. And Paul was like, so confused.
That almost started a riot.
Yeah, Paul was like,
I almost started a riot when they reacted to it.
This a thing that you eat, and I'm like, just fucking eat it, just try it, you know. But I do think so. Going back to it, like, I think French people are obsessed with American culture. I remember when I first moved here, and I would tell people I moved here from New York, they were like, why would you leave New York? Are you crazy? And when I said I lived in Brooklyn, it's like...
Is Brooklyn really cool?
Yes.
So interesting.
So Pro tip, if you want to win over a French person, just tell them you lived in Brooklyn. Apparently, that's like catnip for them.
So interesting.
And I did, when I lived in Williamsburg specifically, I remember seeing like groups of French tourists.
A lot of French people.
Like yeah. so many French tourists. And I was like, I mean, I guess there's, I mean, especially now, there's so, like, Williamsburg is Manhattan at this point, mm-hmm. but even deep in Bushwick, you would see like groups of French tourists like mm-hmm. wandering around, and I'm like, why are you here right now? This is like the randomest part.
I wonder how that got so much, how that got PR'd. Like, why Brooklyn?
I think, well, so I will tell you what I know based on Paul. So Paul ended up in Bushwick. He was living in this these lofts called the McKibben Lofts. It's kind of quite European though. There's like people from all over Europe that live there, and I think they're pretty cheap. They're like lofts, so they kind of, I guess if you're moving to New York, it's like, oh, you want to live like an artist in a loft.
I'm picturing
in Bushwick.
Like the apartment from New Girl, even though that's like not.
Kind of, but like way shittier.
Yeah, I was going to say there's no way it was that nice. Yeah.
And, you know, it was cheap and it did feel almost like a dorm kind of thing. Huh. Like all these like international people live there. There was like a bar across the street where everybody would get drinks. And it was deep in Bushwick, so it was like quite affordable at the time. I think, again, it's like, what French people think living in New York,
because their friends
like. Yeah.
who live in New York live there probably too.
Yeah, that's how yeah. Paul ended up there, and he had a French roommate who he wow. met there, and they're like, okay. So I do think that's like the perception of New York, and so that when they move to New York, they're like, I'm not gonna move to like a random place. I'm not gonna move to like
a random place being Manhattan.
no, but yeah, I guess. Or like, I guess the only other thing, I had a Spanish friend that moved to the Upper East Side, and then she was like, this is so boring up here. And I was like, why did you move there? And she goes, you know what, she moved to the Upper East Side?
Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And then she was like, I didn't know it was going to be boring. And yeah. I was like, well, yeah, if you're not a millionaire, it could be quite boring.
There's good areas. There's like cool pubs up there.
But when
stuff.
You're like in your early 20s,
sure. when
you're not going
to. Yeah. Yeah, you can shop, you can go to your
But when
pub.
You're like 23 in New York and everybody's partying in the Lower East Side.
You want a sticky floor.
Yeah. She was so disappointed. So yeah, it's interesting, like people's perception. I think people base their perception of the United States and American culture on whatever pop culture or media shows you. So that's why I think a lot of French people are actually quite obsessed with what they think American culture is.
And we've seen it vice versa. I mean, Americans are just, infatuated with Paris.
And I always laughed the other day. I was having breakfast in a terrace and there was these two American girls. I think they were American because they were speaking what sounded like American English. And they were smoking cigarettes, but like you could tell they don't know how to smoke. They didn't know how to hold the cigarette right.
No way, really?
And Paul was like, so this is so funny. This is like the typical Americans that come to Paris and think they need to smoke a cigarette. And I was like, you know what? I understand that mentality.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I empathize with them.
You're like,
as someone who doesn't know how to hold a cigarette and is shameful about
but you're
it,
like,
I get it.
I'm in Paris. I'm going to have like sex with a stranger, smoke a cigarette,
get drunk at 11,
have
on the terrace.
Wine with my breakfast. Yep. You think it's like, I think they have this perception of like, you come to Paris and you become this other person, this other version of yourself, and vice versa. Like,
that's actually an interesting point too, that people are not just looking to escape the city, they're looking to escape
themselves.
Yeah.
Or like, what, like kind of touching on the topic that we talked about last time, was like, how are you different? Like, is there a different personality that comes
out
when
you travel?
That's a cool
point, because there's such different personas in terms of their perception. So the idea that you could go to a French restaurant and have your like little classy, sexy, again, this is a perception of Paris, but like your little classy, sexy night, a cheeky glass of wine, a little cig, and then like you kind of escape your own self at the same time, the same way that here having a quick burger feels like a more casual, like it infuses your personality with a casualness because it's so not common to like get, like we went to that Dogma place the other day. I think of that as so interesting. It's like a quick burger, a quick fried chicken burger, a Caesar salad. Like it just feels like you've stepped outside of your normal vibes.
Speaking of Dogma, I went there the other day with my friend Vanessa, and she works in the wine industry. She sells wine in New York, essentially. And they had, so this is a burger place that's really good. It's chicken, fried chicken only. And it's a pretty casual burger place. And they also have natural wine. And apparently there was a natural wine bottle. She's like, wow, that's an allocation in New York. Like super hard to find.
Really?
And here you can have it with your chicken burger.
Really?
And to me, that was like, this is so funny. Like,
it's not your classic.
Yeah.
What was our last episode? $75 glass of shitty rosé or something.
It's so funny how she's like struggling to find that one bottle for like some bars in New York. Or I forgot like how she.
No, and it's literally almost like a fast food restaurant.
Here's you can have a fried chicken burger and a glass of that wine. No problem. And it's probably like €7 for the glass, you know.
The dream. They got some good things. What else do you see here that's like infused from New York? Like, what else do you see popping up?
Well, we have some examples that we kind of wrote out, and we kind of were talking about it as we were walking in the city. And like when I left, we were having coffee. I realized that the street I was walking down in had like literally in the same block, three brunch places.
Yeah.
So I think that's a definitely an American import that maybe started in Paris. I would say like 6-5 years
ago. It definitely was just starting when I moved here, just like for context for everyone, Parisians don't like do brunch. Sorry, they do now, but like brunch was not like a thing. And I mean, doesn't mean like so much the time as for us, brunch is a very specific type of meal. It kind of merges two types of the day. It's usually super hefty, you know, like a breakfast burrito, like something that's going to be like really big, or even like fried eggs and toast and all that stuff. Like they do, they're like the classic Parisian is like small pastry for breakfast,
something
coffee.
Sweet, yeah.
Yeah. And then have a kind of classic full sit down lunch. And the lunch is not going to be like breakfasty items blown up. The lunch is going to be like a poulet roti, a like steak au poivre. Like they're going to do a classic
sort of
lunch.
Like animal protein.
Yeah, like exactly. Yeah.
Potatoes or
something. Yeah. So it's not common. And so when they started doing brunch here, it was so funny because they didn't understand what brunch was. So not that like, you know, I'm being a brunch snob, but you know, they didn't understand what we know as brunch. And so they would just put a bunch of random lunch foods together in little vessels on a plate. Like I'll never forget my first quote unquote brunch in Paris.
Where did you go? Do you remember?
It's in the Marais. It's like colorful. You would know it if you saw it.
Okay.
I'll find it. Maybe I'll link to it. But it was like a little bowl of macaroni. It was like a mini grilled cheese. And it was like, you know what? It was a little bowl of granola and yogurt, but they were like all on a lunch tray that was handed to me. Oh, and it was a mini burger. Oh, I'm not even kidding.
They probably like, Googled like American.
They Googled things. American foods and they made mini sizes and they put a bunch of them on a plate. And this was not the first time, like the only time that happened to me. Like that happened multiple times. So
yeah, I think brunch here is a big trial and error. Yeah. It took me a while to find the good spots, I would say. And normally they're not French, they're like Australian or
right
something
and
like
the
that.
Well the ones that are good are,
exactly yeah. And the ones that do like brunch in the way that we know brunch,
yeah.
Also the one thing that's funny here is like everything, not everything, but a lot of places do like a brunch for meal.
Yes.
So they'll be like, you pay 23 euros, which is normally like,
but to me it's too good value. Is it not too much food for you?
It's a lot of food.
It's always too much food.
That's what I mean, it's like good value because you get a bunch of shit,
but it's like, always like an appetizer, which I always forget what it is. And then it's like your main plate, which would be like eggs or whatever they have for the main plate. And then it would be like your dessert. Oh, then it would be like your granola and yogurt. And then after that, sometimes you get a pastry.
Yeah.
Like it's almost sometimes four. I've been with you multiple times. Yeah.
I know. I went to a place close to my house, like one of the first places I went to in Rue de Martyrs called the Café Marlette, I think. And it was a for meal. And it was like, there was no, like you could pick things, but you can only do the for meal. And I was like, this is so much food.
Yeah.
I ended up taking like the last thing was a pastry, like banana bread. I ended up taking that to go because I'm like, I just had like four things.
That's exactly
but
yeah.
I do think it's getting better. There's a few places that are like kind of get it. They don't have to do for a meal, that you don't have to be like eating a 7-course meal of like different kinds of eggs. So I think some places have gotten it.
What do you think is getting it? Like, how would you describe getting it?
I mean,
like, how do you bring an American or Australian concept here?
Well,
for brunch and like nail it,
do what has been done.
Yeah,
like why are we gonna reinvent the wheel? Yeah. Like if it's working.
To me, I'm like, okay, if they like, I actually love Bouvette. Granted, like opened
like
in
Bouvette.
New York. I think like Bouvette,
but they're international. Yeah,
yeah, they're international, but I think it's like a really interesting example because it's like the eggs are cooked a French way.
Yeah,
but like to me, it's like they have a variety on the menu. They have Bloody Marys.
They also have like one weird plate, which was like a waffle sandwich.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I do think they have like a fried chicken waffle-y thing or something.
Yeah, something like that. And when I say weird, I mean weird for
French
people.
France, yeah. But I like it because it's an ambiance that feels comforting. And frankly, the ambiance feels French because the whole thing was created as France. Yeah. But like, I like places that I don't need you to give me exactly what's in the US, but like, exactly, I agree with you. Do what works. I don't mind if they infuse and bring some ingredients that are classically French, or if they cook their eggs in like a French way. I think when they all try to like mimic US too directly though, sometimes that's where you have some failings.
Which because, kind like, of, yeah, it kind of brings us to like a second point of like contention, or not contention, but one thing that's been popping up all over Paris is bagels.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Have you tried any of them? Apparently, there's supposed
to be a new
one. I've
tried a lot of them. None of them are good.
Huh.
Oh, okay. Let me rephrase that. It's not that they're not good. They're not New York bagels, but they advertise them as if they were.
Yeah.
So There's a few. There's one in particular in the 11th that looks very hipster, very cool. I don't know if the person who started is French or a New Yorker. I have no idea. The bagels are not bad, but they're not the same like New York bagels you would think. They put like cheddar on them.
Which, oh, so like definitely like the toppings are off too.
The toppings are off. They're not bad. But what I tell everyone is like, it's not a bad place. Like the food isn't bad, but it's just not like what you think when mm-hmm. you go to a bagel shop in mm-hmm. New York. And there's a new one I haven't tried. It's actually kind of close by you. Maybe it's in the 6th or the 7th called Cody's Bagel. Oh. And they, I will say, they also don't look like they'll be New York bagels, but at least the toppings look more interesting. They have like different kinds of like cream cheese and schmears and pastrami and stuff like that. And oh, I'm wow. like, okay, this could be interesting. And then there's one also, I think in the 7th by my old office called like Gallery, I think it was. And they also had bagels for lunch. Really good, really sandwiches. But again, I just think a lot of people expect the New York bagel because mm-hmm. that's how they're advertising it. And that just doesn't exist here.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a bagel here that's like...
I've only been to one of the cliche places and it was like not good. I think what like confuses me is why now so much later after the bagel became big in New York is it coming to Paris? And it's just there to me, like we are clearly having some sort of moments, you know, because for there's, I basically think there's been 4 bagel shops recently that I've seen open up that have been trying to mimic.
I think, I would argue the overhead is maybe not that crazy. So it's like an easy thing to open.
Or like yeast and water or whatever.
Right. I would say that's what kind of like going back to coffee shops, which we discussed a few episodes ago. Like there's a coffee shop popping up in every fucking corner in Paris. Right. And I think not that it's easy to open.
Yeah. I also think people like it, exactly what you said earlier. Like when they want to innovate, they're like, where can I, how, what is innovation? Innovation is New York. Like there's just kind of a lack of, to me, it's an easy business idea
right.
to bring something that is already working in another culture to your culture.
Yeah.
But,
and coffee's addicting. So people are going to come in and out to have their fix. Yeah. I think it's an easy thing to copy from New York and it already has like the reputation of quote unquote being good.
Yeah.
So you're like, and also like, they're probably looking as like, what's missing in the market? Like what don't we have here that we can bring here? And I think that's it. I used to think it was pizza, but I actually think we have good pizza in Paris now. Maybe like 5 years ago, we didn't. And now I think that's covered. Now bagels, I haven't found a place that's legit, but
well, they'd have to like ship the water in from New York if they really exactly. wanted to make it. Yeah.
But also I'm like you said, make French bread. I don't care. Like make it in a circle, like just get some schmear. That's not that difficult.
See, it's hard. Yeah. That's how I feel too. I think this like brings me this existential issue I've been having since I moved here because I love certain aspects of American food.
Right.
I do. Like I love obviously like fried chicken. I love brunch food. I love classic American, like mozzarella sticks, grilled cheese, like classic burger. I love that shit. But part of the reason I moved abroad was not to eat that. And I think I have this weird push and pull between craving, like when I go home, I get Westville. It's so deeply mediocre, but I love it so much. Now, do I want to have a Westville in Paris? It's hard because like at what point do we reach this, this moment where the cities are just blurred? And that's where, I don't know. I get it's really nice for people who don't have the money to travel between the two to get to experience other things.
Yeah.
But I'm also not sure that that's what the city needs. I think you have such an interesting point about what does the market need and what will French people receive? I think we're going to start to learn pretty quickly. Like we're going to see what can be adapted. And
you know. We're seeing a lot of the overlap between the two cities. Like we said, another thing that we see that has been a little bit bastardized is the croissant. So how we, and this is on the other direction, meaning I think it all started in New York and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe something else happened before this. But in my opinion, we started getting crazy with croissants in 2013 when I believe his name is Dominique Ancel, who's a French pastry chef, created the Krona. Do you remember the Krona?
Are you kidding me? I've waited in line for the Krona.
I was
going
to say, did you ever wait in line? Did you ever try one?
Yeah, when I started my second job in New York, before I used to be such a good little employee, before I came into the office on the first day, I bought like 50. Like I got like so many. No, I didn't get 50 Kronas. I got like, they all had an allotment at the time.
Right.
I think I got 4 Kronas and I got a bunch of other on sale pastries.
I tried to go a few times and it was always like a line.
Yeah.
And
they like let you get to 3 or 4. And it was
always like one of those things. Like I just never had luck.
Yeah.
And also like it was 2014. I had just moved to New York. I was like,
But he did a good job at it because, frankly, he was able to adapt something from France and merge two things.
And it became a thing. Yeah. And it was also like, almost, not, I wouldn't say it was a luxury product, but it was limited edition.
Yeah.
On demand.
It was like a fashion item. Like, exactly. That's how I literally thought of it. Yeah.
You couldn't, you had to wait in line. It was, I ended up trying it like a year later when like the hype had died down and someone brought it to the office. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I tried it. And I was like, oh, this is good. But again, I didn't think anything of it. Now you can go to any Dominique and Cell bakery in New York and there's not a line. You don't care. Yeah.
Did you know that Scarlett Johansson tried to open? Guess what she tried to open here? Have you ever heard?
No.
That didn't do well, that I actually thought I wanted to do because it's one of my favorite things.
Wait, what?
Scarlett Johansson tried to open a popcorn shop in Paris. Ooh,
she tried?
Yeah.
Did it open? Like
it opened and it closed. I don't know what year. It was called Yummy Pop. Yeah. She tried to open a popcorn shop. And it's funny because I only learned about it because years ago I was telling my friend, France doesn't get popcorn. Like, I love popcorn. Like the U.S., like the aisle with like a million popcorn bags. And they were like, you know, Scarlett Johansson tried to bring it here. Because it's interesting to me to think about, okay, you said, what's the hole in the market? What do people want? Then what fails? Like what actually it can't convert?
What is the interpretation of it? Because the croissant, like you said, everybody in the U.S., or not in the U.S., but specifically in New York, everyone's obsessed with the croissant, but they're not just, you can find regular croissants anywhere, but they're also taking it to the next level. Because then you also have, I don't know if you remember seeing this, I think it was in 2022, that thing called, I think it was called like the Supreme, which was like a circular croissant filled with like chocolate.
No, I don't even know this.
It was super viral. It was from Lafayette Bakery, I want to say.
Maybe.
And people were saying, lining down the street, it ended up making its way to Paris. That's how popular it was. And then on the flip side, if we're going to keep going with the croissant thing, Apartment 4F in Brooklyn, I think it's in Cobble Hill. Yeah. They sell this croissant cereal, which is basically mini croissants. You know how much the box is?
No.
$50.
No. It's the like big a cereal box?
Yeah. $50. And they sell out almost every day. I mean, they're actually
hand-making the little mini croissants. That's wild.
But that's like, I'm like, again, how do you know that that's what the market want? And I guess it's like the Instagram thing. I really have
this
urge
to create a matrix and like this, like a whole chart where it's like, it's like classic New York brought to Paris, one for one. And then it's like Breakfast in America or something. I don't know.
Whatever. Yeah.
And then there's like New York bastardized for Paris. Yeah. And it's like bagel shop.
What is
and
the interpretation? Like, yeah. Because in Paris, then we have our own bastardization of the croissant. It came here because I think a lot of Parisian boulangerie owners were like, wait, they're fucking selling out these croissant things. Like maybe we should do it too. And there is a place called Maison Louvard. I think it's called. It's like not far from here. And they did the crookie. Have you heard of the
crookie? Yeah, of course. I didn't know that. I didn't know who the first one to do it was, but I know everyone now just does
now
it.
Now you can find that everywhere. Yeah. And same thing. So this place is kind of close to my house. So I would pass by it all the time. There was like lines and lines and lines and lines at the door.
Is it even good? Have you had it?
I had it. I mean, okay, here's my review. It's good because it's like a cookie croissant and a croissant. It's like you can't go wrong. Yeah. But when I ate it, I had the same thought. It was like,
did we need that merch?
Who asked for this?
Yeah.
Like, this is so random. It's not like a thing that goes together. But
so interesting.
And now they have, and actually that's my snack. It's called French Bastards, that their version of the crookie. So I'm really curious to try it.
Can I have a bite?
And then also the giant croissants. Yeah, we're gonna try it. The giant croissant you can find here. I forgot the bakery.
It's near that one's near. Well, one of them is near me. It's on
Philippe
this,
something. I think
is that the, it? Okay, there's one near me. There's like this little square near me on my side of the river, and they're huge and in the window.
They're not as they're actually more affordable than I thought. I looked it up. They're €32
for a big one,
for the big one. But then again, I'm like, well, this is, I mean, an Instagram
one
creation.
A small one is like $1. So
true.
Multiply that, it's still
But when you compare it to a $50 cereal box, you're like, this is crazy. Yeah. But to me, I'm like, the giant croissant. Like, no hate to influencers who like buy it as a prop, but to me, I'm like, this is so wasteful. Like,
unless you actually do eat it.
Unless you eat it. But that's what I'm saying. I'm like, if we go and ever try it, we would have to invite like five friends to help us eat it because they're
giant.
You don't
think you could eat the whole thing by yourself?
It's the giant croissant?
Yes. I could eat like 12 croissants at once. They're just air.
Yeah. I don't know. I just kind of feel like the way people use it. And again, going back to the Corona, and it's like a status symbol, like the croissant. It's become like this. And I don't know what the correlation of it is, but it's like, it's all made for social media. The crookie, the whatever. And it's like,
maybe that's a good point. I think there's like a good point of, so I keep coming back to this question of like, when does it work? You know?
Yeah.
And it works when it creates a feeling that people want to feel. It's not just a symbol. It's not just a little fashion item and a little accessory. Like, it works when, to me, when you go to a restaurant in New York and it's like actually like feels, yeah. And it really, like, the waiters feel maybe a little snarky and a little like funny. Yeah. And I mean, I've never been to Lucien, and I'm curious. It's been open for such a long time that it feels to me like it clearly must be doing something right. But I feel like there must be certain restaurants that are able to bring that, but then adapt it in a way that feels right. And so that's, I think, really tricky.
Yeah. What do you have any places? I mean, any places in New York that you think were like good at that?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't really know, I wasn't really into like getting French food when I was in New York, to be fully honest.
Yeah. I didn't really care about French food until I started dating Paul. And I would say the only two places that I was like, this is the closest you can get, I would say, Baltasar, not the restaurant, the little bakery next door, I thought was like, it felt pretty like Parisian. Like, it felt like you were like in a boulangerie in Paris. When you went to pay, that was very different because it was much more expensive. But the place really did feel authentic. Maison Première in Williamsburg, but it's a cocktail bar. So it's a little different. But it does feel very sexy. Okay. And like, I wouldn't say French necessarily, but it does feel a little different. Mm-hmm. And then the last one was, there's this place called Bar Tabac in, I'm going to say, Cobble Hill. And I don't think I've ever actually eaten there, but it's a French restaurant. And they throw a Bastille Day block party every year. And it's crazy because they have like pétanque and they have Ricard and they have all these things that you normally don't see. These French things that are very French. And you normally don't see those in like the US. They're not very mainstream, I would say. And I would say that's a one celebration slash like block party where I was like, it's full of French people, but also feels very French.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it also does feel like very French, like have like a block party paying pétanque. Have you been to Vaudor, Le Vaudor in New York?
No.
This, I've seen it all over my social lately. They have like the tablecloths that like these like classic like checkered red and white tablecloths. And I'm just very curious because it seems like one that has, it seems to have promise, but who knows? Right. I don't know. It's also like, yeah, I just... I wonder if it's satiating people's emotional craving and if it ever really can, you know?
I think, yeah. And I think it's interesting because for us, nothing will, because we've lived the real deal. So when we go back and we go to a French restaurant in New York, we're going to be like, this is bullshit.
I will be honest. It's really taken the joy out of dining in New York for me. Sometimes like going to an Italian restaurant or a Greek restaurant, it's like after I've literally sat by the ocean eating Greek food in Greece, or like, you know, gone to like Tuscany and it's just hard.
We're ruined.
Yeah. What about outside food? Like, I think we, you know, I'm interested in like the pharmacy obsession.
True.
It's just like that's people a good are obsessed one. With
French pharmacy stuff.
Yeah. You know what I find really funny about this specifically? So I have friends who work in skincare and I'm like very into, I don't know, I'm like really interested in skincare stuff. I don't know that much about it, but I try a bunch of products and stuff. And I just find like the US has a lot of times more powerful products. Like, you can just access more powerful products. Granted, they might have to be by prescription. We also have like so much more innovative products because the US just has more. So it's always interesting to me that everyone comes to the French pharmacies. I know there's like the A313, which is like a high whatever grade, like dose or whatever you call it. It's like retinol.
Not a small
so there are
dose,
some of those, but I just find it funny that it's been sensationalized in such a way that people come here and it's like on their bucket list.
I think the French skincare phenomenon, I think it's like this whole, again, going back to like people are craving simplicity and people are craving like something cheap and easy and accessible. And I think it's also when you come from the United States to Paris, it's almost like an activity you do. You go to the French pharmacy to buy all these things and stock up on things that you are probably not even going to use.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you definitely have variations. There's a couple exceptions. I think they have higher sunscreen regulations here. So I do know some stuff. If you guys ever want to look at this stuff, Charlotte Palermino on Instagram.
I love her.
Yeah, she's really great.
She's like the best. She breaks everything down.
Yes, and she is from French Canada, I think. So like
she's French too, no? She lived in Canada.
Canadian. I thought she was Canadian.
Her French sounds French.
No, but... You mean
like not? French, she doesn't sound Canadian. Québécois, huh? But anyway,
I don't know.
But she's really good at breaking the differences.
She like explains this a bit. But I find it such an interesting impulse to like buy something to create simplicity. But I kind of get it. Like the act of accumulating more shit, but something about accumulating a French piece of shit makes people feel like they're reducing. Do you know what I mean? Like, I also think like this is the same way with like Cezanne, or it's the same way with like Maj. Like, people come over and they're like, I'm just gonna get one nice piece from Cezanne or Maj. But I'm like, you have 10,000 pieces already, and this isn't that different from what you have. But it like satiates this. Like, you're right.
It you're like, oh, it's French.
It's French and it's like simple. So you have this like weird. It's so interesting to like throw money at an emotional and personality issue, which is like what these situations to me are. It's like, yeah, it's thinking that capitalism is going to solve a craving for a different way of life, you know?
It's all marketing too at the end of the day. Yeah. It's like selling this lifestyle that's completely different from the one that you have.
Like, I just feel like lately it's like, I don't know, I feel like every city's having a weird identity crisis. So we're becoming like a surface level of our own city. Yeah. Even here, I know I'm kind of spiraling the conversation, but like, I think part of the reason I'm therapizing myself as I'm talking it through, but I think part of the reason it bothers me is because it like cheapens all aspects of it. Like, here, have you know the like flowers on the like the cafe corners that are covered in flowers?
And I
It started with like a real cafe with real flowers, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys have seen this, but like every corner terrace these days in tourist areas is coated like in fake flowers.
That's your sign to not go there, by the way.
Yeah. And I think it's just that was created because it looks so classically French. So then Americans started to go to it, which means that they had to do it to cater to the money of Americans, which now it's become a fake version of Paris within Paris. And like,
and also because I read a report about it, brasserie owners saw a 30% or something like that, like a big percent in sales increase when they put the flowers
I'm not surprised by that. Yeah,
I know.
And I even feel this way, so this might be controversial, but in New York there's a huge kind of elevated classics trend happening.
Yeah,
like even Rolo's was a bit like this. Bernie's is for sure like this. I think a lot of the new age, if it's not French, the new places are oftentimes like elevated mozzarella sticks.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
And I think we talked about this on the restaurant episode, like what happens when that becomes like a parody of itself is that mozzarella stick is $25 and they kick you out of the restaurant after you take two bites of it and say someone else needs to take your mozzarella stick seat, and everything just becomes this like amped up parody.
Yeah, you're right.
And so it just cheapens everything. And so part of me is kind of becoming like anti-globalist. I'm obviously not, but like in this moment,
you're like, well, let's just keep
it what it is, and then like get on a plane. And again, I get that's a privilege and not everyone can do that, but I'm sort of thinking like, I mean, this
there
is
has
the issue
to be
with
an
tourism
in between, because it's like, because then we also complain about things being too French, you know? And it's like,
well, this conversation causes me an identity crisis, because
you're like, you know what you want.
Well, I'm also the queen of being like, why doesn't France have a good salad? And then I'm like literally single-handedly supporting.
No,
L&D's
I am
business,
with you. I feel the same way. I'm like, a part of me is like, yeah, like we're in Paris, like let's stop pretending we're in New York. But then a part of me is like, I want to have, I don't know, a breakfast burrito. So it's like, I think somewhere in the middle, I think there's so much, like there's so many restaurants, bars, coffee shops and things to explore in Paris. I think if you're looking for something traditional, there's a million of them that you can visit. Mm-hmm. And if you're feeling that you want something more, if you're homesick and you really want to pay €7 for a chai latte, there's so many options for that too. And I think New York is the same way. Whatever you want, you can find. I just think for us as a little New York, because Paris wasn't that way. New York has always been that way. You can find anything in the world in New York. Paris is becoming that, but it wasn't that. Paris was very French, I would say, like 10 years ago. It was really hard to find anything that wasn't French. And now we're seeing, I think after COVID and a lot of people moving here, we're seeing all these different cultures and all these different interpretations of these cultures. Because a lot of times it's French people, like there's this Cuban restaurant that I went to and I'm like, you're obviously all French because it's not what a Cuban sandwich is. But yeah, but then I went to another one and they were French, but they lived in Miami, and I was like, you get it.
So this is to me kind of how I want to like conclude, because I think this is the question, is how do you do it right? And of course, everyone has a different version of what they see as right. But I think to your point, there's a mix of enthusiasm, real experience, something that comes from not just wanting to like rip off a trend and make money, but genuinely comes from like a celebration and an excitement about something that someone tried once. And of course, there's nuances here, and there's probably like, I obviously, we're talking more about American Paris, but like there's also, you know, cultural appropriation that can happen if you this. But I think I really want to keep my eyes open now after this conversation and look for when I feel in both cities, when someone's doing it right, when someone's not just cheapening the city and like taking a quick flash in the pan trend and using it to like get a line down the block.
Yeah.
Versus when someone's like really creating something that feels like, okay, they took the inspo from the original culture, but they adapted it to the context. Because you can only do so much with a French restaurant in New York if capitalism and table turnover and like rushing guests and charging them like $25 for a glass of wine. That's not that is not even a French restaurant. Like that takes... So how do you adapt it in a way that makes sense for the New York context without totally losing the soul of what makes something French? And same for, you know, New York items in Paris.
I think in New York it's trickier because, like I said, the lifestyles are so different. I think it's not doable for a restaurant owner in New York to open a brasserie where you can sit for 3 hours and just order one coffee. No.
But is there like, I wonder, this is me like rambling now, but is there like a psychological way to make people feel like they have more time? Is there a way to make them feel more relaxed? Is there a way to try to bring that, the soul without, you know, I don't know. I don't know the answer.
I mean, I think New York is really good at creating spaces that you're transported to different cities and you can find different cuisines or whatever through the food. And I do think the food scene is really good. The experience as a whole is a different story.
Right.
I just don't think you can realistically spend a long, like a 3 hour dinner without either being pushed to buy more or leave if you're not buying more.
It's wild. It isn't 3 hours. It doesn't even sound that long to me.
I know. Where I think the experience is harder to recreate in New York just because of the way that the city is built. And also, I don't think people have 3 hours to spend at dinner sometimes. So I just think like culturally that would never work. In terms of the quality of the food and the innovation around it, I think New York has that down and they're very good at it. Vice versa, I think you see a lot of the generation of the younger chefs in Paris that are innovating and doing cool, really cool concepts, really cool things, and really kind of nailing it. I think where it becomes obvious that the person has no idea what they're doing is when they're like, just throw shit at the wall and see what sticks kind of thing. And it's quite obvious when you see it, it's this person hasn't lived abroad or hasn't traveled enough to take this concept. I see it a lot with Latin food here. You can automatically tell when the person running the restaurant is from a Latin country or not. But I'm a little bit of a traditionalist in that sense. I'm just like, if you're going to do, for example, I'm Venezuelan. So if you're going to do Venezuelan food. Don't try to make it French. Because people are not looking for French Venezuelan food. They're looking for Venezuelan food, in my opinion. If you're going to do American food here, stick to American food. Sure, you want to go crazy every once in a while and do like a plat du jour that's like a mix between the two cultures. Why not?
Interesting.
But in my opinion, I think what makes culture interesting, or like how you can export it in a way that seems authentic, is to leave it as is. Don't try to turn it into something it's not, because that's when it becomes crazy and weird. Sure, do we have some success stories like the Cronut? Okay, why not? But I'm like, if I'm looking for Mexican food, if I want tacos, I'm not gonna get like, I don't want a duck confit taco necessarily. Does that sound good? Yes, probably, but I don't need that. That's not what I'm looking
for. That's so interesting.
So that's kind of like how I think they can be successful in doing that. Like, how do you bring American culture or like an American restaurant? And I think, I mean, you mentioned Breakfast in America. Is the best food of your life? No, but it's super comforting and you know you're going to get like...
It's pretty one American, for one. I mean, it's even not one for one of a nice diner, but it's like one for one of like a pretty like... mediocre diner, you know,
and they do a good job at transporting you. You're like, I'm in a diner, I'm sitting in a booth, I'm having a, I don't know,
the service
breakfast
is
burrito.
Nice.
The service is nice. You're just like, am I in the United States?
Yeah.
So they do a really good job at that. I think another person that, or not another person, but another place that you mentioned is L&D's, the salad place. Even the fact that their salads are expensive, like salads in New York are like, the quality is good, the food is interesting. It's something you don't find that often.
I don't
in Paris.
Know why that one works. That one to me was a risk.
Because they stuck to what was working. They didn't try to put foie gras in the salad.
Well, they do sometimes on their their limited edition. They have like canard
but,
duck
okay,
salad.
Okay, limited edition. Yeah. That's what I mean. Like the core of their business is like healthy salads, healthy huge salads, right? They have like a Caesar salad, a Mexican salad.
Maybe you're onto something. I think I still have this like weird aspiration that like there is a way to like take the soul of the product and, you know, I'm trying to think of a really good example, but I'm thinking of like, you know, you have a product that's based on like a product from New York, but then you, the soul of it is, well, the soul of it's like comfort, right? But there's foods in France that are really comforting. So how do you like occasionally bring a little bit of that comfort to like, you know, you have to take the theme of the food and the ethos. That's why brunch doesn't make sense to me the way that they did it here, because the whole thing with brunch is to me is a giant plate of something that's going to cure a hangover, that's like greasy, that's huge. It's not like three mini bites. So they didn't take the soul, but they could give me like, that's why I like Bouvet. Like they can give me a big ouf brouillé, whatever, with, I don't know, like a little bit of smoked salmon or something, right, that feels a little more elevated, but it has the soul. So anyway, I think,
yeah, I'm, I mean, like say, I said, yeah, I think there's some mixes who do that it right, work well.
Yeah.
Like, and I mentioned the Corona because it's like the first thing that came to my mind, but it's like, well, you had a French chef, mm-hmm, create a very American, and he took
the quality
product
of the actual croissant, which, yeah, I think is key. You know?
And he used the American side as the gimmicky side, which is like, let's create a new product. That's how we get marketing.
Yeah.
With the French pastry making tradition. So you kind of have like the savoir faire of the French pastry chef, which is very fucking French. And then you have the American.
Look at you, the savoir faire.
Okay. I used to work in the wine and spirits industry. We use that word every fucking 5 minutes. And I think, yeah, it's an interesting way, because I don't think a lot of people are successful at doing that.
Yeah,
and
I'm curious.
Like, I don't know what the secret is.
If people listening to this, if you guys have submissions or ideas or things that you find have balanced this really well, because I'm sure we're missing.
Yeah. Do you have any places in Paris that you think have,
no, I want to hear from people. Like, I want people to comment on this at the end.
I would say the
me.
Only other place, and I mentioned pizza earlier, is Rory, yeah, in the 11th as well. I don't know. So one of the owners, I think they're both French actually, but I don't know. I think one of them probably traveled a lot because they really nailed the New York slice. Hmm. They're like giant slices, New York style. They're so fucking good.
I still haven't been there.
And it's not that it feels elevated, but it does. Like you don't feel like you're having a dollar slice. The place is like super cute, decorated, like modern minimalistic vibes.
So clearly they've merged it though. They've taken the casualness of a single slice with clearly, I mean, not that New York doesn't have elevated pizza, obviously it does, but okay, I'm gonna go there. I've only been to Ubat's, which I really liked.
Ubat's,
but they did
really
have
good.
A bone marrow pizza,
yeah,
which was really good. And to Ubat's, me, I thought really they did a good job on that.
No, they're great. The only I would say the only difference is they're like personal, like personal style
pizza
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And Rory is like slices.
Slice. Yeah.
So, okay. But yeah, I think we're gonna see a lot more overlap between.
We're gonna see a lot more attempts. Let's just say that. So we'll keep our eye on what we like, what we don't like. But yeah,
be informing you on the next croissant hybrid.
We'll treat eating like our job.
Yep. Time for our next segment. How do you not know this? So is there a segment where we each bring something in culture that the other one is not super familiar with? So what do you have for me, Gabby?
Oh my gosh, what do I have for you? Okay, so I just held Dani at gunpoint and made her watch these videos.
literally
like just staring at her reactions. I don't know if anyone is addicted to TikTok as I am, but there's this woman, her name's Mackenzie Barman, and she has a series she's been doing of two women in their 60s who go to a high school reunion and see like one of their old flames. It's just her. She has a different filter for each character. I have never seen acting this good in my life.
It was really good.
It's literally, I'm so invested in every single character in it. It's literally her talking to herself with filters. Every character has such a deep persona that she keeps flushing
the
out.
Mannerisms are great.
Oh
too.
My god, it's like, it's incredible. They're kind of like East Coast women, so they've both got these like, Maureen, let me tell you what I like. Yeah. Like it's like they're incredible, and everyone knows someone like these women. Nothing has gotten me this excited in so long. So
is she an actress?
Her TikTok bio is future award winning
she's
Oscar,
really good at acting.
Future Oscar winning actress. I don't think I've ever seen her in anything. She's really good at acting.
I really like, yeah.
Like imagine
really
having
funny.
Like Jenny was laughing because one of the comments was you have so much chemistry with yourself, yeah, because she's like flirting with like the guy
all
version.
All the characters.
Oh my god. So we'll link to it, but I just am obsessed with it. And I think once again, like I was talking about last week on my, you know, was it last week or the week before where I said I want to be a casting director? But
yes,
it's so fun to just see the talent on TikTok. To me, this is...
There's so much creativity.
There's
for sure.
So much creativity. Yeah. There's so much talent, like and kind of untapped talent too. So anyway, I'm calling that she's going to be in something or do something, or she's going to write... She should write a series and like write characters too. Yeah, she's incredible honestly. At just like developing.
I think eventually we're going to get to a point that people are just going to be like watching TikTok for content, like watching, not people do that already, but you know how we have like the streaming network, like we have like Netflix, right. We have like HBO, premium whatever.
Content. Yeah.
People are going to like stop watching that and just watch TikTok.
I mean, if it's honestly like this good, it just, it's incredible.
Yeah, because I can't see her going to a network and then buying this. You know what I mean?
No, she would have to flesh it out. Exactly. She's not going to do a filter series.
It's a watered down version.
So I don't. Know? Yeah. But she could. Yeah. So anyway, she's really talented. She's talented at understanding characters. She clearly understands like different types of people. She's writing an incredible plot line that's so believable.
The script too, the way that the characters talk, it's just so funny.
Oh, I love like she runs into her old flame and her friend goes, uh-oh. Like, it's just like exactly your friend's mom who was always like being, she was like asking you about your period and your crushes. That's like exactly the type of woman that one of these friends is. I love it.
That's really
okay,
funny.
What do you have?
Mine is about bread.
Ooh, my favorite subject.
I know. So this is specifically for you because we talked about this, I don't know, a few episodes ago, how there's basically an award for like the best baguette. In this case, the best tradition in Paris.
Yeah.
And it's hosted by the city of Paris. And we have a winner for 2025. Yeah, it's every spring.
What's the winner?
So it's a boulangerie called La Parisienne in the 10th arrondissement.
Wow.
And the award was given to Michel Redelet. I'm probably mispronouncing his name.
I'm not going to be the one to correct.
Anyway, he won the Grand Prix de la Baguette de Paris.
I'm so behind. I never even had Utopie, which was last year's, and I never even had it.
I mean, it's... We can have it. We can do a bread crawl.
I want to do a bread crawl or bread party. So after a cheese party, I want to do a party where everyone brings a baguette from a different location. A tradition from a different location.
I love that.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. Well, this guy won for 2025. Basically, I think they had 187 competing baguettes and he won.
Wow. And do you know what they did to say what the criteria are? I'm so curious.
I don't know what the criteria is exactly. I mean, it's a tradition. So, you know, it's very strict what you can put in a tradition.
But I wonder if they're like crunchy. It must be like texture, like saltiness. Like,
yeah, I guess it's like, I guess they look for like what is like the best form in terms of like taste, smell.
Yeah.
Like all that stuff.
I want to try it.
But yeah, so he was just awarded. And when I was looking for this news, I came across a really interesting statistic, which is according to a study.
Don't tell me that like every baguette takes a day off my life.
No. It's not like a negative statistic. Yeah. But according to the Fédération des Entreprises de Boulangerie, they did a study in 2021 where they calculated that around 320 baguettes are sold in France every second.
Ooh.
Isn't that crazy?
300 of them are just me.
But anyway, so if you want to check out the best baguette, best tradition actually, in Paris for the year of 2025, head over to La Parisienne in the 10th arrondissement. We're going to try to make it and maybe try it at one point.
Maybe I like for this idea of our spiral. Little field trips.
Yeah, I think it could be. We could start with a giant croissant.
Yeah.
And then we can go to the other one and
this
one. I will
finish and prove you wrong.
But yeah, so that's my
cool
my culture.
Okay, time for our next segment. Snack and spiral, spiral and snack. Woo! Danny, what are you snacking on today?
Okay, I wanted to keep in the theme of cultural overlap. So I went to actually a bakery here called the French Bastards.
Oh, funny.
And they have this thing called the cookie roll, and it's basically, well, I haven't tried it yet. We're gonna try
it
for
out
the video.
We look at it at the same
time. I loved your reaction when I showed it to you.
It's said, fucking
it's the
insane.
Size of my head.
Insane. Oh my god, guys, I can't wait for you to fucking see this thing. Is it underneath? Is that supposed to be a croissant?
I don't think it's like a croissant, but sort of. Yeah, it's like the same puff pastry. Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, it's a giant cookie.
Wow. It looks way better than the original one. Just want to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So essentially what happened, and this is me, I'm pretty sure this is what happened. This other place called La Maison Louva did the cookie, which was literally a croissant with cookie dough.
Like oozing out of it.
And then they were so popular that French Bastards was like, we want to do our version. So they did their own version. The difference is theirs is like round.
And the cookie's on top.
And the cookie's is on top, exactly. And so we're going to try it. I've tried it before a few months ago. It was good. But the thing about it, it's giant. So you need to share it with someone.
Well, luckily for you, I'm hungry and I'm here.
Yeah, but the thing is, what I did wrong last time is I only ate a piece of it. And I was like, I'll save the rest for tomorrow. And then it became really like stale.
Yeah.
So it's the kind of thing that you need to kind of eat the day off.
You don't need to tell me twice.
Yeah. So that's my snack. Again, I would say I only subscribe to one croissant hybrid I really enjoy, which is the Cruffle. It's a waffle croissant.
What? I never even heard of that. Where do you get
that? I really
that?
Like it. It's a Korean coffee shop in the 10th called Cafe Shin. And it's very cool because obviously like I feel like Koreans are just the coolest people ever. And so they have a really cool coffee shop. All the coffees are really cool, two really interesting flavors. And then they have some pastries. And one of the pastries are like, I guess like their main pastry is the Cruffle.
But I don't get to explain. Like,
so it's croissant puff pastry, like the what is it called? The flakiness of the croissant in a waffle. I guess they put it in a waffle machine.
What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
It's really good. I will say
it
works.
How does that even work?
I don't know, but it works. I'll show you a picture.
So it's a croissant in the shape of a waffle?
I'll show you a picture later and I'll post a picture on the Instagram. I don't have it that often because obviously it's like a fucking, it's so heavy. But I had it recently with my friend, with Bea. We were walking around and we're like, let's get a little treat. And we sat there and we like ate this Cruffle. It was really good. It's the one thing that I'm like, this actually goes really well.
Oh, I want that.
And they normally serve it with ice cream. I normally get it without the ice cream just because I'm like, I don't think it needs it.
I want it with like caramel.
This one is black sesame ice cream. Yeah.
Well, you know how I feel about black sesame ice cream. Black sesame is my favorite flavor palette ever.
So, yeah, that's the only hybrid I'm like,
okay,
I love. So, let's see about this cookie roll or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. And you'll see the video on Instagram and see our reactions.
And what are you spiraling about?
I'm spiraling about something that happens to all of us here, I think. If you have a slight accent when you speak French. So, it happened to me the other day. I went to this, like, very international coffee shop. I'm not gonna say the name, but whatever.
Okay.
And
we are a really popular podcast that would really blow things up for this place. So we should be responsible.
It's not even that. It's just like I just hate the pretentious vibe kind of thing. Anyway, I got there early, so I was like, "Can I get a table outside?" Because I didn't understand how it worked. Like if there was like table service.
By the way, this should be my spiral one day. I never understand. How it works in Paris. Can you just sit? Do you have to go ask? Then you go to ask to sit to be respectful. They roll their eyes. If you just pull up a chair and sit, they sometimes get annoyed at you. It's like there's no answer.
So sort of what happened. I came up and I asked the guy, "Oh hi, can I get a table outside? How does it work?" And in French, I ask him, and he answers, "You can sit wherever you want." And I was like, "Okay." And then he goes, "But you have to order here." And it's in English. And again, and it pissed me off because I'm like, you understood me. Why are you answering me in
English?
They
do it every time, though. But this is, you know, I've had like a massive spiral on this and I had to do like a whole, I have to now explain to myself. I have to justify.
They're being nice.
I have to say it if they want to practice their English because I started to lose my mind. I found it so rude. I'm like,
well, I started telling them like I need to practice my French.
Yeah.
And so, but also with him, because he was just giving me like pretentious vibes.
Yeah.
I just continued responding
to
him in French.
This is what most of my friends do now. They just refuse to back down and they just keep speaking.
That's what
French.
I did. Yeah. And he kept answering me in English. And I'm like,
and you're like, we're at war. Like, we're for sure going to throw hands.
Like, that's what I have never spoken as much French as I did with that man. I was like,
so it's working. You're practicing.
And then there's a few instances where I've done it. And you can tell they switch because they want to help you, but they're nice about it. I don't know. There's a lot of like,
it's vibes. Yeah.
You can read the vibes. Yep. And I've told people before, like, I need to practice my French. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, great. Like, they're super, like, when you say that, the attitude completely changes. Yep. And they're like, great. Yes, I want to help you practice. But for me, it's like, I hate when that happens because it makes you feel like shit. It makes you feel like, can you not understand me? But also, it's like, my group of friends here is mainly foreigner, so we speak English all the time. The few interactions I have in French is when I'm ordering food or when I'm out. And so while I understand a lot of people switch back to English because they want to help you out, sometimes I'm like, shut the fuck up.
I don't why speak. But you know what, this is where I'm gonna be a bitch right now, but I'm like, I don't think it's because they want to help you out. I think an occasion you can sense the vibe if they want to help you out. French people are not very helpful, so it's to me, it's like they want to...
They want you to speak perfect French.
They want to speak perfect French, or they think it's not worth their energy, or they want to... Everyone tells me they want to practice their English. But you know what experience I had? Like, one time I was parking my Vélib, which is like the city bike here, and it got like stuck, blah, blah, blah. So I had to call up the service. And it was like, I was 30 minutes late to dinner. It was charging me extra money. So I call and I speak French. And she goes... So he speaks to me in English. And she like refuses to do it in French with me. And then she literally... Instead of just speaking French with me, which I was understanding fine, she insisted so much that she had to speak English that she typed in the words onto her phone, translate, and played out in English.
That's crazy.
Over, because she thought that was better than her just listening to my French. That's crazy. Just insane.
I can't do French over the phone, so I will say that. But in person, I'm just like... Let me speak my shitty French. If you can understand. And the other day I went to breakfast with Paul and I order an omelette. And I go, I don't know. I'm like, je prends les omelettes. Pardon?
Yeah.
Quoi? Je comprends pas. And I look at Paul like, did I say it wrong? And Paul's like, no, you said it right. And I was like, why is he being a dick then? And then so finally I had to like point on the menu. I'm like, l'omelette? And he's like, ah, okay, d'accord, le melee. Yeah. Oh, come on.
You're like, I'm always like, context clues. What else of a five things could it be?
Is a fucking French word.
I know.
Like, I'm not saying like something wild. Anyway, so that's something that makes me want to fight people.
Yeah.
Especially when they don't, sometimes they get the hint when you continue speaking French. Because I'm like, what if I don't speak English?
Sometimes they get the hint or I agree with you, you say you're going to practice. But like, I agree with you that they're like, my friend's husband once like was so rude to me. I like said something in French because I was trying to be fucking nice to him. And he was like, j'ai pas du tout compris. And I was like, okay, literally fuck you. Like, I you're going to be heated because like this subject.
I know. But I know a lot of people, a lot of foreigners in Paris feel this because it's happened to all of us. Because
they get mad at us if we don't speak French.
But then when you speak French with an accent, they're like, I refuse. Yeah.
And by the way, like, I have multiple friends who are half French. So one parent's French, one parent's a different culture. So they speak fluent French with like the most minute accent. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend, you know, our friend who's half Scottish, half French. She'll love the shout out. She the other day spoke French and he immediately spoke to English to her right after. And she speaks completely fluent French. So it's not just us.
Yeah, and also Paul has an accent when he speaks French because he's from the South. And when he speaks to Parisians, like the first
I've watched that happen with him.
Like, tu viens d'où? Like, you have a little accent. And Paul is always...
They did it with him in wine the other day, right? Huh? He said du vin, and we said du vin or something.
Yeah, he also... They say, instead of avec, they say ave.
Oh, really?
And then there's a few words that they say that Parisians don't say. I forget right now, but... He has an accent, like he has a Southern accent. And so people are like, oh my God, you have such a cute accent. And Paul hates it when they're like,
of course,
because it's always like, accent. Oh, you come from the countryside. Like you peasant.
Oh my God.
No, I mean, they don't say that, but it's always like, implied. How cute your little accent from the countryside. And Paul's always like, shut the fuck up. But all that to say, tell people to fuck off when they switch.
Yeah, kidding. That'll work. That's our official podcast.
Get into a fight with a barista at a fashion coffee shop like I did. No, I didn't get into a fight, but I definitely held my ground and I was like continuing speaking French. I ordered in French. I did everything in French.
Go girl.
And I don't know how he felt about it, but I really didn't care because I was
it's not your responsibility to worry about his emotions. He's certainly not worried about yours. Yeah.
Anyway, what's yours? What's your snack?
You guys want to hear a little ASMR? Can you hear that all? That's definitely not what ASMR
is.
That
sounds chaotic.
I have four bags of Brett's chips sitting next to me.
You love these chips.
Okay, first of all,
let's get them to sponsor the pod.
Yeah, Brett's, if you're out there.
If you're listening. If anybody that works at Brett's corporate HQ, let us know.
I would truly give my life for these chips. So I am through and through a chip girl. Chips are one of the most cathartic things for me to eat. I'm a very savory snack person. I prefer a snack over a meal. I prefer a savory snack over a sweet snack. And I prefer a chip over almost anything. So Brett's is a brand of French chips. And what's so cool about chips in France is they just have so much variety. I don't remember this in the US.
You're right. Yeah.
Like right sitting in front of me, we have Chef Piment Espelette. So this is one of the most famous Brett's ones. Espelette is something you can only get in France. It's from the Basque region. It's a type of pepper.
Or Spain.
Yeah, or Spain. Yeah. Sorry, but it's a Basque country.
Basque country.
I have barbecue sauce only because I wouldn't normally get barbecue, but it pairs well with one of the cheeses we're having tonight. So I'm going to bring the chips tonight. I have one here that I'm obsessed with that I've been eating.
We've been eating that.
It's aioli. Really oh good. My God, this is a new one, or at least a new to me.
Very garlicky.
Very like garlicky. So I'm so sorry to everyone that I encounter tonight. And then what is the last one I have? I already forgot. Oh, confit d'oignon.
Cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So really excited. It's confit d'oignon with balsamic vinegar.
Have you had the chicken flavor once?
Poulet roti. I like that one a lot. I almost brought the fromage de Jura because I love those ones, but I thought it was a cheese party, so I'm gonna bring the chips, and I'm like, cheese on cheese, I don't know if we need that. But
every time I go to like a Carrefour and I go through the chip aisle, I'm like, there's so many.
I mean, I wonder if they were mocking me. A girl bought 4 bags of chips today, but it is what it is. Okay, spirally.
What are you spiraling a lot?
Okay, mine's like a little bit like snobby, but whatever. I'm good. It is what it is. Mine's of people who give advice without asking questions.
What do you
mean? Curious what you think.
Like how?
I've just been noticing lately that there is like a whole genre of person who will offer advice without even bothering to assess your situation.
Let me ask a crazy question. Does this happen over Instagram or social media?
Okay, so we've talked about this. Okay. Yeah. No, this is in person.
Okay.
So Instagram, I kind of get it. Danny kind of confronted me. Just kidding. He didn't confront me. But confronted I was complaining about so many people giving me like really annoying, getting me really annoying DMs. And Danny was like, well, to be fair, you kind of like.
No, what I said was.
A mental health disorder on the internet.
No, I said the problem, not the problem, but it's like you're too relatable.
And yeah,
compliment. You're too relatable. So people think they know you. So people, and this happens a lot on social. So when you share a lot of your life, or when you're very online, people think they know you based on that alone. And they think they're entitled. They think you're friends. And so they think they're like, Gabby, you're going through a breakup. Have you tried relaxing? And you're just like, fuck off.
My favorite, which is like, babe, it takes time. It's just going to take time. I'm like, I'm 34 years old and I've almost ever been dumped. I'm aware. Like, I know how this works. But it's not so much that. It's more, I was listening to this really interesting podcast, and it's this book called Super Communicators, and he was on Offline, which is that like Pod Safe podcast, and he was talking a lot about how we like have lost the ability, like actually he was talking about how every time we have a new technology, we don't know how to use it to effectively communicate. So he was saying that when we had the telephone, people had no idea how to use a telephone, so they would pick it up and they would treat it like a telegram. Is that what it was? When they would be like, want this, stop, tell me, like, so they'd call the grocery store and they'd be like, send milk, stop. Yeah, exactly. They'd be like, and so then there's apparently studies now that we've learned to adapt to the telephone. So we over-exaggerate our voices and our inflections. Also the notion of just saying hello. Like, we don't walk up to our friends and be like, hello, all the time, you know? And so we learned the etiquette. And then he was talking about texting, and he was saying some of us still just run into a lot of like culture clashes, to be honest, between generations, between different types of people. And we haven't always learned how to use text in a way that enhances connection. But he said it's not impossible. And it's kind of a cop out to think of text as like not a connection. It just has to be used appropriately. But he made this comment, which made me think about this, which was people who ask a question before they offer their own response are much more likely to build a connection. So for example, if I tell you, what's your favorite food? And let you speak versus saying, what's your favorite food? Mine's cheese. And I start going into it. That really enhances a connection.
Okay.
And it just got me thinking of like how powerful asking and truly listening is. And then I really wanted to justify it, so I looked it up. And it's true. Most studies show that people almost never want actual advice. It usually just makes them defensive. They think they'll want advice, but when their friends actually give it to them, they don't like it. And I'm often that way. And so I try hard with my friends to ask them a question before I immediately prescribe. But I've noticed people do it a lot about relationship stuff, and it's starting to irk me. You know.
So what's your experience? You think people are just coming up to you, just giving you advice without asking questions?
People will like hear, or they'll like see social media, mm-hmm. or like they'll hear I'm going through a breakup, and it's not just breakup. It'll be like job situation. It'll be like moving cities. It'll be stuff. And people will immediately give advice based on their own situation, mm-hmm. which to me is fine, but I'd rather just hear about your situation than you prescribe it to me as advice. Like, I'm old enough and have been through enough that I know how to pick and choose what I want to internalize versus what, I don't know, versus what
you're offering. So you think people are like, you're grabbing coffee with a friend and they're like, You know what I think, Gabby? I think you should start going to therapy.
It really bothers me.
Instead of being like, hey, Gabby, do you go to therapy?
Yeah, or like, have you thought about it? Or what's your experience with this? And I love hearing other people. Like, I'd really prefer someone says, when I was going through this, what really worked for me. That's like totally fine. Yeah, because then I can pick and choose. But the prescribing to me, I don't know. I don't think I'm the only one who feels this way, because I don't know if you've heard this technique with friendship that I've been told, which is when a friend is complaining to you or venting to you, mm-hmm. you ask them, do you want support?
Yes.
Do you want to do it? Or do you want advice? Yes.
You have to do this. I try to do that.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm giving advice to a friend. That was happening the other day. I was giving advice, I think you were there, about like a dating situation.
I remember. Yeah.
And it seemed like she wanted support.
Right.
And so every time I would say something against what she was saying, she kind of would fight me off. So at one point I said, do you want support or do you want feedback?
But I think it's a really good thing to ask your friends, because then it at least allows them to opt in, so they're not as allowed to be as feisty about it. I don't know if you ever, there was a Parks and Rec episode that I loved, and it was, what's her name? Rashida Jones, whatever her character was. Anne, I think. She was pregnant and she was just mad and she was uncomfortable, and her partner, the really peppy guy, kept being well, I'll get you this and I'll do this, and why don't you do this? Rublo. He's like, why don't you do this? And she's so annoyed at him, and he's like just trying to be helpful, and finally she's like, all I want you to do is say that sucks. And I told this to my ex, and then, to be fair to him, later in the relationship, every time I was annoyed, I could watch him. He'd literally go, that sucks. Cause I would I taught him to be like, shut the f-. And it's known, cause I used to work with all these like men's groups when I worked in sexual wellness in New York. It's known that this is one of men and women's biggest issues, cause men always try to solve, and that's how they communicate love. Whereas like, we don't often want them to solve our problems. Yeah, we just want them to hear us and empathize and tell us that like, it's hard and
sometimes
it sucks.
You just want support.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
So anyway, that's mine, but I understand people are only trying to help, so I need to be better at sort of establishing, hey, I've tried all of this, like, I'd be interested to hear what you went through, but, you know, and then I'll take from that and make my own decisions, you know?
There's something about unsolicited advice that really annoys me, though, so.
Especially, I mean, not to be a bitch, and this is not from you, so I'm just not saying this, but, like, people who have been in, like, really long-term relationships sometimes, like, giving advice on, like, early-stage dating, I'm like, no, like, I'm sorry, like, unless you've been dating in 2025 and know how bad it is right now, I don't want to hear if you met someone in 2015, it's just different, you know?
I don't even want to give advice on relationships unless I'm asked, to be honest with you, because it's like, no, because it's
everyone's
true.
So different.
Well, everyone's different, and it's like, some people don't want advice.
So
unless you're asking me for advice, I'm not gonna give it to you. But I think you could tell also when you start talking to a friend how they respond to what you're saying, and if they're being like defensive, you're like, you just want me to agree with you. Which is fine. Interesting. I hate unsolicited advice, specifically on social media, because oftentimes it comes from people that don't actually know you, that have maybe been following you for a few years and they think they know you. And I think there's something weird about social media, especially you were talking about how we don't always use like new technologies to communicate effectively. And I think that Instagram or social media in general, it's a big like...
I agree with that. Yeah.
Because I think especially a lot when you're linked to people.
Yes. And when you're offering for you, and I only get this sometimes, but it happened to me a couple of times this week when you post something and everyone's like, where is this? What's the address? Like, where can I get this? And it's funny because inherently there's nothing wrong with that, but it's something of treating you like you're like a vending machine of information, especially when you have a newsletter that could be paid for.
This happens to you, and I think to all of our friends that live in Paris, that people we went to high school with that we haven't talked to in 10 years will message and be like, hey, going to Paris, what are the best restaurants? Sir?
Yeah.
What?
I know. But there's a way to do it, because one way that I really like is when someone's like, hey, do you have one of those template emails that you send to everyone? And I do. And I say, mine's good for first timers. And they're like, great. Do you mind just forwarding it to me? That to me is like a very perceptive, easy, low lift way that I don't mind.
Right.
To me, the restaurant thing, because like that puts the onus back on us, where we have to ask, what kind of food do you like? How many times have you been to Paris? Do you
also,
have
like, any dietary restrictions? I haven't talked to you in 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, I know.
So, or you're a stranger on the internet I've never met. So
it's hard because we offer advice and we offer recommendations online. So I can't be mad at us getting it, but I do think it's about tone, to your point. You know?
I think it's tone, and I think it's entitlement. And I think it just kind of becomes I'm not a tour guide.
Yeah.
And maybe if I was offering a tour, you could sign up for it, but that's not the case. So I do think there's something about social media blurring the lines and like what people think they're entitled from us. That's very interesting. And again, it's weird because you are oversharing online. You are saying all these things about your life online.
I know. That's
and then you're like shocked when people are like, hey, I'm going to Paris. I love your life in Paris. I love the life you depict in on your social media account. Can you tell me how to live that life? And you're like, go fuck off. You know?
So that's where I'm like, grain of salt on both sides of it. Like, I have to learn to accept. Well, we're going to do an episode we've decided on social media and our relationships with it. Yeah, so we'll address it then. But yeah. Well, good combos today. Yeah. How far are we over today on our timing? Not too bad.
Oh, good.
We've been worse.
Let's
go eat some cheese then. Yeah, we're starving. So we're going
to
go eat. But yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.
See you next week.
See ya. This was Clashes,
a podcast brought to you by two idiots.
Clearly. I don't know if I can laugh on cue.